This is Glenn Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning on 710 WOR.
So I think we need to clarify right off the bat when they talk about Hurricane Michael, they're not referring to your performance on this radio show. This is more like an occasional puff of wind
that
might mess your hair a little bit. But you know, the big stuff, they're saying it's up to a category two, so it's getting bad.
It is. It's headed for
the panhandle,
and it looks like it got up into South Carolina. And Bartlett was telling me yesterday when we were having fun here in the studio that South Carolina is underwater when you were there. Now it's going to get more water.
Yeah, there was flooding.
But could you back up a second? So I took the day off. You two clowns were doing a happy dance. Kevin's in. The Democrats lost. That passes as great radio and entertaining radio.
Yep, it was.
Well, I guess it was. Our big three stories, of course. The ceremonial swearing-in last night at the White House for Brett Kavanaugh. The president calling all the accusations against him a total hoax. Will be joined momentarily by ABC News White House correspondent Karen Travers. Also in the Big Three, we have the latest on that horrific limo crash near Albany. 20 killed. Neither the driver nor the limo should have been on the road. And rounding out the Big Three, Yankee season really on the brink tonight. Their historic trouncing last night. Never in their glorious history have they lost a postseason game as badly as they did last night. 16-1. It got so bad that the backup catcher had to pitch in the ninth inning.
The backup catcher had to pitch?
Yeah, and Brock Holt, as you know, Michael, became the first player ever in postseason play for Boston to go for a cycle.
Yeah, that was impressive.
You know what the cycle is? Yeah, what's the cycle of baseball, Michael?
It's something that doesn't happen very often.
That's correct.
He was good at the reasoning questions on the SAT.
What might you, just, there's a batter.
Okay.
So what might you think a cycle might entail?
Getting a hit.
Yes. How many?
Getting a single, then a double, then a triple, and then a home run.
Right.
Is that correct?
Did you tell him that?
No, I didn't this time.
I was waiting to see if he needed help.
I figured that out myself.
You don't have to do it in that order, though. It did turn out the home run was the last one.
Right.
But yes, and it's the first time in the history of postseason baseball. So Brock Holt of the Red Sox, who was an insertion into the lineup last night,
Just call me Howard Cosell.
Yeah. No, I won't call, call you. And I'm not calling you Hurricane Michael either. Call you Puff of Wind.
Thank you very much.
Cuba Gooding Jr. is going to join us live at 8:40. We're going to ask him to show us the money. You think anyone ever says that to him?
You always go for the obvious and then it's, all the time.
And that's called me Mr. Obvious. And 9:05, Dr. Oz will join us. So how about the president apologizing to the nation last night at the ceremonial swearing-in for Brett Kavanaugh?
On behalf of our nation, I want to apologize to Brett and the entire Kavanaugh family for the terrible pain and suffering you have been forced to endure.
So with that, let's bring in ABC News White House correspondent Karen Travers. Good morning, Karen. What did you think of that?
It was, a victory lap for the president last night. Of course, Kavanaugh had already been officially sworn in to the Supreme Court over the weekend by the Chief Justice John Roberts. So last night's event was ceremonial. All the other eight justices were there attending at the White House. And, you know, the president was using this as a chance to, you know, kind of close the chapter on what has been a very contentious and controversial couple weeks, if not months, of this nomination. The president said he wanted to apologize to the Kavanaugh family for that terrible pain and suffering he says they were forced to endure. He also had a false declaration where he said that Kavanaugh, under historic scrutiny, was proven innocent, when in fact there was no definitive conclusion reached during these confirmation hearings and that FBI background reopened investigation last week.
Hey, Karen, can you confirm if Ruth Bader Ginsburg has a pulse? I mean, I saw that last night, and she looked like she was expiring right before our eyes.
Yeah, she was there. All the justices made it over, which was notable that they were all there, just given how contentious this all is. There was also a point made, too, and I remember this from covering the Kagan and Sotomayor process, that they didn't do a similar ceremony like that at the White House because they wanted to keep a separation between the branches of government. So kind of a notable difference this administration compared to the previous ones. I know that Chief Justice John Roberts did do an event like this at the White House with the Bush administration.
Now, what did you make of the president earlier in the day calling all the allegations allegations against Kavanaugh a hoax?
You know, he's been kind of evolving over the last 2.5 weeks on this, and that's now where he is. You know, there certainly isn't evidence that this was some politically created story. But the president, you know, originally had said that Christine Blasey Ford was credible. That's what he said about her testimony. Emotional and compelling was what the White House said that day. And now the president saying that this whole thing was a hoax.
How are his political advisors now feeling about the upcoming midterms in the wake of the Kavanaugh controversy?
Well, you know, the president says that this is going to energize Republicans and that Democrats are upset about this process and they're going to vote Republican. I mean, there's no evidence in any polling that there's been this big swing from Democrats saying that they're now going to the right. Certainly, the polling suggests that this whole process is going to hurt Republicans in the House, you know, in those critical suburban, especially districts where women voters are going to be a big deciding factor for the Republicans keeping or losing seats and the Democrats possibly taking control. The Senate, perhaps a very different story. A lot of analysis over the last week about what this could mean in some of those critical races, North Dakota, for example, Indiana, Missouri, places like that, where there's some tough re-election campaigns right now for Democrats. I think a smart point that a Republican made last week was that, you know, it's a lot easier to energize a voting base, a voting bloc around anger, frustration, and not getting something. So the idea that Republicans could ride this momentum of Kavanaugh's confirmation for 4 weeks into the midterms, that's a tough challenge because they got what they wanted. And now that chapter is in some ways closed. He's on the court and that's it. Whereas Democrats can keep pointing to that as a way to rally their side. It's a lot easier to do that out of frustration and anger. This is one point from a Republican who's been very involved in this process.
We're on with Karen Travers, ABC News White House correspondent. And Karen, I'm surprised the president's been so quiet this morning because by all accounts, he's had a good week. Some of the polls show him nudging up, but of course, it depends on which poll. He's still very low in many of the Gallup poll, for example, but he's extremely high in the Rasmussen poll, which always treats him more kindly. Does his Twitter silence this morning so far surprise you in that regard?
No, he wasn't tweeting yesterday morning either. So, you know, perhaps doing other things this morning. He'll have actually no public events here at the White House today, but he'll leave this afternoon to head to Iowa for a campaign rally. This kicks off another aggressive swing for the president. He's got four rallies over the next 5 days. So this kind of keeping that aggressive campaign schedule going between now and the midterms, which is just 4 weeks away.
Hey, that big bombshell report, as Len likes to refer to it in the New York Times, about the Trump family finances and possible tax evasion, doesn't seem to be sticking. Are they riled up about it at the White House, or do they get a sense that this is just not going to take them down in any way?
Well, at the press briefing last week, after the piece had been published, Sarah Sanders was asked about it, and she very quickly just dismissed it as false, didn't say what was false. Of course, it's a very large report over a long period of time that they did this research. And she was asked for specifics. She didn't say. And the president yesterday also was dismissing it, you know, saying that he's done very well. I think they're just trying not to talk about it.
Hey, Karen, before you run, how about the bromance now between the president and Rod Rosenstein, who hitched a ride on Air Force One with the president yesterday?
Yeah, and the president made, you know, I think is what his most definitive statement about Rosenstein's job status. He was asked before he left for Air Force One if he had any plans to fire Rosenstein, and the president said, no, I don't. That's as far as he's gone to say that Rosenstein can stay in this position as the number two at the Justice Department. The question is, for how long? I think the president certainly has been convinced by allies and advisors that don't do anything dramatic before the midterms, but after that, we'll see how long Rosenstein's in this. But he did say about 2 weeks ago his preference was to keep him in this position. It seems to be holding for right now. The president said yesterday they have a good relationship.
All right, Karen Travers, ABC News White House correspondent. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Bye, Karen.
Hey, Michael, does it surprise you how absolutely dead quiet the Mueller probe? We don't hear anyone mention Mueller. We don't hear anything about the probe. Is that intentional on everyone's part not to interfere with the midterms? Or how do you judge that thing?
Well, it's interesting. I did see a report over the weekend that Mueller has been quietly letting staff members go, which some people read as a sign that he's wrapping up the probe.
That would make sense.
In which case, boy, Len, you might be really disappointed when there's no evidence of Russian collusion.
But I don't. There's another. But I don't think he'll issue anything before the midterm.
No, I don't think so. I don't. It's not in Mueller's character to throw a wrench into the whole works.
Don't be so cocky and confident on this one. I don't think he's going to spend all this money and spend all this time and say, ah, nothing to see here, let's move on. He'll come up with something.
I mean, oh, great. So that's what you want. Just, oh, we're spending money, so we got to come up with something. Anything. Please. Desperation.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, when we get back, the Yankees are on the brink. Last night's historic loss, and we shall analyze. Can they come back? Plus, your chance to $1,000 coming up at 9:05, and Mark Simone is coming up at 10 right here on 710 WOR. Coming up right now, we have Bernie Vider, and here's...
Hey, good morning, everybody. Well, it was a good night for the Yankees. Well, for the Red Sox.
It was a good
bad night for the Yankees.
But before we get to that, didn't you, earlier today, you said you had some appearance at some arts club.
Yeah, the Solomon Gundy Club.
You said it was the Solomon Gundy Club, and I asked you, who was Solomon Gundy, and you said he was some kind of arts patron or something?
I think I was wrong.
I think you were very wrong. I think you just pulled that out of your tush.
I did.
And you had no idea what you're talking about.
No clue who Solomon Gundy is.
Well, George tweeted. Yeah. He said, your insufferable co-host doesn't even know the correct name of the venue he's speaking at. Will undoubtedly bore those assembled. It's not the Solomon Gundy Club, but the Salmagundy Club. It's one word.
Salmagundy. Okay.
Salmagundy. And, I heard you saying before it was a food dish. A Salmagundy is some kind of a food dish.
It was a stew that the club members used to eat back in the 19th century.
Yeah, it was also based on a name. I guess Washington Irving put out something called
the Salmagundy Papers.
So there's no such person as Solomon Gundy, and it's not even called Solomon. There's no Solomon.
And that's from George, who calls me insufferable. George, if you're listening, I'm going to put you on the guest list tonight, okay? Give you a good seat.
But they say it's one of the oldest historic buildings.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful building on Fifth Avenue around 11th and 12th Street. It's a gorgeous building. But I will be there 6:30 to 8, panel about the future of arts journalism. Len will be there in the front row cheering me on, right, Len?
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be there, like me, going... Because I was there. A team of wild horses couldn't drag me to that thing.
I'll buy you a drink, okay?
Well, now you're talking.
See? There you go.
So anyway, the Yankees, never in their history they lost so badly, so poorly. They lost 16-1. Luis Severino didn't have it, and the Yankees piled on. And as soon as Severino came out of the game, this happened.
And the 2-2. Swung on and ripped down the right field line. That's a fair ball. Vasquez will score. Bradley comes in right behind him. Mookie hustling. He's going to get waved home. As Judge had a problem getting the ball out of the corner, it's a bases-clearing double for Andrew Benintendi. And the Red Sox lead it 7-0.
Oh, that's Joe Castiglione on WEEI Radio in Boston. But, wow, they really... As you know, because we discussed it before and you figured it out.
The cycle.
So we're all very proud of you.
Thank you.
It's the first time in Major League postseason history that one player had a single, a double, a triple, home run in the same game. That someone would be Brock Holt.
All right, here's the Brock star. What a night he's had.
And he's... Oh, that's cute, Joe. The Brock star. Not rock star.
Brock
Holt. Very cute, wasn't it?
Well, okay.
Now this that's the Boston. You don't hear this on a New York broadcast. This was the Boston broadcast.
Swings and rips one deep to right down the line toward the corner, hooking, and it's a home run. A two-run homer for the Brock star. And he has hit for the cycle for the second time in his career.
Well, the real headline there is it's never happened in the postseason. Mm. That's pretty well. So tonight, it's all on CC Sabathia's shoulders.
Wow, a lot of pressure.
The Yankees have to win, and if they...
what's your gut tell you?
I don't know. I really don't know. Joe's laughing over there.
Come on. I'm not asking you. In sports, you don't have a freaking opinion?
I know. I don't know. I don't know. Let's wait and see. See what the Mueller report has in it.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see. I'll let you get back to
you are a legend in the sportscasting world. You were just inducted into the Syracuse Broadcasters Hall of Fame. I ask you a simple question. What does your gut tell you? And you say, I don't know.
Come on. Nobody's going to hold it against you.
I tend to think that Boston may very well wrap it up tonight.
Thank you.
Now you need protection when you walk outside the studio. There you go.
We see why.
That's why he was holding back.
But you know what? My gut, I've had very bad gut feelings before. Most of it's, you know, just from working here.
Yeah,
but
sure.
With you, no. When you have a gut feeling in sports, you never know. Who would have guessed 16-1 last night?
No.
I thought the Yankees had the edge. So did the odds makers last night.
So did Bartlett.
If I were here yesterday with Bartlett, I wouldn't have been dancing in the aisles the way you were with Kavanaugh. But if I were here, you said, well, who has the edge? I said, well, I think the Yankees have the edge.
They did.
Coming back home. The crowd's going to go wild.
I had my doubts.
Did you really?
Yeah. Well, my sister and brother-in-law, they live in Boston. They're big Red Sox fans. So I hear how great the Red Sox are up there all the time.
Well, they have had a tremendous season. And it wouldn't surprise me if they wrapped it up tonight. And it wouldn't surprise me if it goes back to Boston for a game 5.
Oh, whatever. Now you're saying everything. There you go.
Yeah, there's Len.
I want to be a weathercaster. It could rain. could snow. There could be fog.
On one hand. Len's got so many hands, he's an octopus. On the one hand, this.
On the other hand, five fingers. So I could cover it all. But, okay, you put it... I think the Red Sox have the edge tonight. Your girl's happy now? Now you're going to come in tomorrow and say, ha, 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 we told you.
I think the Yanks are going to pull out. All right, let's get the news now at 8:30 from Joe Bartlett.
By the way, he also said Tiger Woods would never win another major.
Oops.
I did.
I was going to bring
Has he won another major?
That was a major. He won the...
It was not a major.
No, no, I'm sorry. You said, but he wasn't going to win anything.
Anything.
That's true.
Okay. All right. 2,500 mourners gathered last night in Amsterdam to remember the lives lost in Saturday's horrific limousine crash. 20 people were killed, all 18 in the vehicle and 2 pedestrians, when that limo failed to stop at the intersection, hit a parked car, and then careened out of control into a ravine. The NTSB now taking a close look at the driver. According to Governor Cuomo, that driver should not have been behind the wheel. And the limo itself was inspected and failed an inspection. That should not have been on the road. Brett Kavanaugh gets down to work today as a member of the U.S. Supreme Court, a ceremonial swearing-in held yesterday at the White House, attended by all 8 other members of the court. And during the event, the president offered an apology to Kavanaugh for the contentious confirmation process that he had to go through. The president now doing battle with Taylor Swift, this after the singer-endorsed Democrat Phil Bredesen over Senator Marsha Blackburn in the race in Tennessee.
I'm sure Taylor Swift has nothing or doesn't know anything about her. And let's say that I like Taylor's music about 25% less now, okay?
All right, the endorsement worth about 25%. Swift says Blackburn's voting record, though, terrifies her. Florida Governor Rick Scott telling people in the panhandle, get out. Hurricane Michael has strengthened to a Category 2 now and is expected to make landfall tomorrow. It could be deadly.
Don't take a chance. 120-mile-an-hour winds. We're going to have 12 inches of rain in some places, but 12 feet potentially of storm surge. Do not take a chance.
Well, that is pretty scary. Anthony Weiner could get out of prison early. He has been given good behavior, so that means he could get out in May, which is 3 months earlier. He is serving time for sexting an underage girl, of course, you'll remember.
I certainly do.
The end of the Cleveland Indians season will also be the end of the team's mascot, Chief Wahoo.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. An agreement with Major League Baseball earlier this year said this season is the last time the tribe will wear the longtime mascot on its uniforms. Merchandise featuring the character will still be available.
Oh, wait a second. Really?
Yeah, well, the team
will still make some bucks off this racist trademark, but we just won't put it on the uniform.
The team is not going to wear it.
Gotcha.
Hey, finally, listen up, Natalie. New research finds that parents have just 32 minutes a day to themselves.
No, Natalie doesn't even have
that. I think I have half. It's when I'm driving.
New study says the average parent admits to hiding from their kids 4 times a week just to get some me time.
Wow, that's so true.
Parents with a full-time job spend another 18 hours a week on average taking a direct care of their kids. On top of their job. 32% say they don't actually stop working until at least 8 p.m.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
8 p.m.
When their parenting is factored in. So you don't get any time until 8 p.m.
Natalie doesn't get any time until when? 11 p.m. and it's bedtime.
Exactly.
That's her time.
Yep. That's okay. It's all good. I like both aspects of my life, so it's fine. Good.
There you go.
There she is, perky and bubbly, despite it all. All right. Hey, Len, show me the money, as you would say.
No, you see, I'm sure Cuba Gooding Jr. doesn't want to hear that. Uh-huh. That's just tacky on your part.
Cuba Gooding Jr. joins us next. He will be showing us the money. He's on Broadway, and he's got a new mystery thriller out. He wrote and directed it. Also, do you want a grand in your hand? Your next chance is coming up at 9:05 on 710 WOR. And now let's get the traffic from Bernie Biden.
8:39. How great is this? Who doesn't love this show?
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees.
It's B.B. Newworth.
Yeah, it is. Down. Love the show.
Great show. Great show.
I saw Jerry Orbach at this show.
Well, that was a long time ago.
That was 100 years. But now,
yeah, it was a long
now
time ago.
The show has the great Cuba Gooding Jr. as Billy Flynn. Cuba Joy. Hey, good morning. Bronx's own Cuba Gooding Jr. Good morning, Cuba.
Hi, guys. How you doing? I love that. Jerry Orbach. I think that was 73, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, it was mid-70s for sure.
74, 75. Yeah. Indeed, it was. Yeah, cool.
That was great.
So how do you like playing Billy Flynn on the Great White Way with Cuba?
I'm telling you, I'm having a ball. And I did 4 months on the West End in London. And we had sold out shows, you know, applause, great. Nothing compares to Broadway. Yeah. These audiences, when I jump out there and I yell, is everybody here? The audience erupts, and every little thing you do, they just respond to it. It's been magical.
Hey, Cuba, I know that you began as a singer. You've got some musicianship in your background. Your parents were musicians, and I do believe you started out dancing with Lionel Richie, if I'm not mistaken.
I was one of the official break dancers in the 1984 Olympics behind him.
Wow.
I think there was 200 of us. Yeah, yeah. No, that was the jumpstart to, you know, that global audience thing. And I think it kickstarted the bug in me to want to do this.
Mm. Did you go to Broadway shows when you were a kid growing up here in New York?
No, I was too young then. I moved to Los Angeles, you know, right before I started elementary school, right at elementary school level. And didn't find Broadway until after Boys in the Hood, believe it or not.
Really?
I came back. Yeah, came back for the first time and saw the first show I think I saw was Cabaret. Oh. And I literally saw it like 8 times in a row over a 2-week span. Because I was just so blown away by how in close proximity the audience was with these performers and dancers and singers. And I was hooked. I was hooked from that moment on.
And that, of course, was the one with Alan Cumming, right? The revival. That was a sensational show.
We are on with the great Cuba Gooding Jr. You burst on my consciousness, of course, with Jerry Maguire, but my goodness, now you're on Broadway. Now you're a director, and you're acting, and you wrote the Bayou Caviar, which is in theaters now. Writer, director, everything from A to Z. I thought that People versus O.J. Simpson on FX was a wonderful series. You played O.J.
Oh,
my
gosh.
Goodness, what are you most proud of in all this?
Wow, that's a big statement. I think it might be this Broadway run, even though directing has always been my goal since I was, you know, for about 10 years ago, I said the end game is to direct. You know, I've always idolized careers like Clint Eastwood and Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, these actors who transitioned to the directing chair. But I have to say, we lost my father last year, lead singer of The Main Ingredient, Cuba Gooding Sr., and when I stepped on that stage the first time and connected with that audience vocally, I understood my dad's life passion. Mm. And now a little bit is rubbed off of my soul, and I think this is something that I'd want to do or revisit again through the rest of my life because it really is magical, man.
Hey, I want to ask you about the O.J. Simpson portrayal because it was critically acclaimed and it was really magnificent. You didn't do an imitation. That's what was so fascinating. I'm curious to know, how did you get inside the character of O.J. Simpson?
Well, you know, you first have to credit Ryan Murphy because he was the visionary for the project. And when he met with me, he put that question to me. He said, O.J. Simpson's bigger than life, and you are Show Me the Money. That's exactly how he said it. I said, oh, okay. And he goes, so how are you going to make that transition? I said, Ryan, I'm not here to be O.J. I'm here to find the emotional truth in the character. And if you look at my roles from Boys in the Hood to Men of Honor to Jerry Maguire, there's an emotional through line to the core, to this passion of these people. And, you know, he had said that he didn't want to make it about his guilt or his innocence, but he wanted to make it an indictment of that time in Los Angeles in 1992. So he needed people to help him tell the truth. And I said, well, I will tell the emotional truth to whatever you want me to, during whatever take. If you want me to play him guilty, I'll play him guilty. If you want me to play him innocent, I'll go into that mindset. And I think because of that, it was the tools he needed to tell that story through the character.
Yeah, it was a very subtle and nuanced performance, I thought.
I will tell you, Cuba, if anyone who hasn't seen that series on FX, I mean, you had Sarah Paulson, who you'd swear was Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
You had Sterling K. Brown, who you'd swear was Darden. I mean, it was really cool.
Right.
It was a remarkable... And John Travolta, who was one of the producers, was a terrific Robert Shapiro. I thought it was a great series.
And don't forget about Courtney B. Vance.
Courtney B. Vance
killed it at Johnny Cochran.
Absolutely, the guy who played Cochran.
Hey,
absolutely.
Cuba, I'm old enough to remember seeing Courtney V. Vance when he was opposite James Earl Jones in the original production of Fences.
Wow.
Hey, tell us.
Oh, yeah.
Tell
that
us
moment was great.
Oh, it was terrific. Tell us about Bayou Caviar, your new movie.
Well, Bayou Caviar came to me as a script that was in development with a director attached. And when that director fell out, they offered me to direct it. And I said, well, if you allow me to do a 3-week pass on the script, if you like it, then I'll know that this is the project for me. And basically, it's a story of an impoverished community in New Orleans, of a group of good people who get caught up in a bad deed, a sex tape. My character is an professional boxer who gets recruited by a mob boss played by Richard Dreyfuss to get some dirt on one of his employees. And so that begins the hijinks and the collaboration with a photographer played by Famke Janssen and her subject, Catherine McPhee, and then this underage girl played by Leah Johnson. And it's they all go on the road to redemption ultimately, but they go through the seedy part of life. And I think we did something great in New Orleans, which is a community who loves cinema.
Well, I'm just amazed the range here from the TV to the stage to films. Cuba, you're doing it all. You know, the staff behind the scenes here, they made me promise I wouldn't ask you this, but I don't listen to them. I just want to know how many times someone comes up to you and says, show me the money. That's all I want to know.
Yeah. Every damn day.
Very good.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we're envious of you because I know Chicago very well, and you've got some very attractive women that you're performing with who surround you on that stage night after night.
Oh, I tell you, there's something about this role, and the reason why there's been, I don't know, 17, 20 different famous Billy Flynns. They introduce you in such a way where they yearn for your presence. And when you're not on stage, they're talking about you.
Yeah.
So your presence is felt all the way through the musical. And then that you know, All I Care About number is just, you know, it's a showstopper. And we're having a ball every day. And some of these characters in this play have been on this thing 17, 15, 20 years doing the same musical, and you feel their prestige, you feel their energy, you feel their expertise in their roles, and it's just easy to just play with them every night, 8 shows a week, 6 days a week. It's great.
Cuba Gooding Jr., it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the broadcast this morning. Thanks, Cuba.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you, Lynn.
All right, go see him in Chicago. He'll be there through November the 18th playing the legendary Billy Flynn. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, at the Ambassador Theater. And he's right, you know, every night.
Damn day, wise asses like me say that. It's like the first time I saw Pesci, and I said, do I amuse you? You know, the line.
Oh, no, you didn't,
Goodfellas.
Did you?
I did.
Oh,
I
my
did.
God.
And he looked at me like he didn't know what I was talking about. I think he was just annoyed.
When you ran into Clark Gable, would you say, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Yeah. When we return, Wiener's early release and de Blasio's gym excuse.
Oh, God.
Plus, if you want some more money, you get a chance at 9:05.
Hey, I
want
to give you a chance to win tickets to see The Band's Visit, this year's Tony Award winner for Best Musical with yours truly. I'm going to be there, and after the show, I'm going to have an exclusive interview with a member of the cast. The Band's Visit rejoices in the way music makes us laugh, makes us cry, and ultimately brings us together. For a chance to win and join me at our first ever matinee with Michael, go to 710WOR.com/contest. But you got to do it before Friday. Contest is over with on Friday, so before Friday, go to 710WOR.com/contest.
Let's get some traffic now. Here's Bernie Viter.
Hey, good morning, everybody. We just had a fun interview with Cuba Gooding Jr., who is appearing at the Ambassador Theater as Billy Flynn in Chicago. And he was just terrific as O.J. Simpson. Lion Murphy
Well, that series was terrific. But I just got a kick out of that. Can you imagine, just like me, how many people come up to him and say during the course of a day, show me the money, and he has to smile and be polite and pretend.
Every damn day they come up to me.
He said, every damn day.
And people still come up to you and say, hey, spanning the world.
Well, I like that.
You do.
They come up and say,
every damn day,
every damn
year.
Hurt.
Oh, nobody got hurt. That's right.
No,
that
I get that. I get that more than you think, Mr. Riedel.
That's right.
Well, what's your catchphrase, Mr. Broadway?
Give him the old razzle dazzle.
Oh, okay. Fine.
People come up to me all the time and say, I love your book, Razzle Dazzle.
Really?
Every damn day.
Yeah. How's your book doing?
It's 375,000 on the Amazon list. I check every morning.
You do check every morning?
I do.
What do you think's going to happen overnight? What do you think's going to happen?
A miracle. I don't know. I just hope maybe it'll gain some traction there. I don't know. You're looking at me because I have something to do here.
Well, unless you want to talk about your book for another 4.5 minutes.
I'm more than happy to. All right. Here's somebody that we all know and love. Anthony Weiner. Yes. Carlos Danger, as he used to call himself when he was texting. Well, he began his 20-month prison sentence just last year, and he's supposed to be in there for a while, but he's a model prisoner, and he could be released as early as May 2019. I love the way the Post puts this. Here's a classic Post ready for you. Ready?
Yeah.
Weiner, who has failed at being a husband, at sex rehab, and at politics because of his uncontrollable urges, has managed to be a model inmate at the Federal Medical Center in Devens, Massachusetts.
Hmm.
Failed husband, failed politician, failed sex rehab patient, but he's a model prisoner.
What do you think he's going to do?
I wouldn't put it past him to try to run for another office.
Oh, I don't think he
is. Oh, I think he's...
Really?
I think he's totally shameless.
Oh, I don't think so.
He loves the spotlight. He loves power. I'll bet he'll run for some minor office.
I don't know.
Consumer advocate or something like that. But I could see him. I could see him going for it. He does no shame. This guy has
no
shame.
I don't think he'll
run for office. Political animal. That's
can
all he
even
is.
After this?
No, I can't.
Are you allowed to run for office?
He ran for mayor after he got caught sexting.
No, this wasn't caught. He's in jail.
I mean, what? Is
he
there
got convicted.
Is there a prohibition on running for office?
I'm not sure.
That probably helps your cause.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think there is.
I think he's going to be on some talk show. You know, like,
who's going to want to watch him on a talk show?
No, he's just going to be a talking head on cable.
Oh, God.
But I think he will definitely be in the public eye. I don't think he can avoid being in the public eye.
Oh, he loves it. He loves the spotlight. Yeah. He's a spotlight hog. He can't be out of it.
You heard about this thing with the mayor, right? He's in the middle of a workout, and then some homeless advocate came up to him.
Yeah.
And he just said, I'm in the middle of doing my workout. I can't do this now. And he ran away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he's claiming that there's an explicit rule in the gym. You're not allowed to film in the place.
Oh, come on.
He said that once, because this give and take was being filmed, he was not going to engage them. That's why he got up and walked. He said he would have been happy to help this person reach the right contact at City Hall. But since
this
it was
is
being
so
filmed,
this is so Weasley. This is so Weasley.
You don't buy this argument?
You really think he sat there thinking, how I really can't do this because there's a rule against filming in the gym? Do you really think that was on his mind?
Well, he said he regularly interacts. He told New York One he regularly interacts with other constituents who approach him at the gym, provided they don't try to record it. That's what he said.
Provided they're friendly and tell him what a great job he's doing. Which this person was not.
I guess you're not a mayor fan.
That's what I've concluded.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for Mark Molinaro now. He's running against Andrew Cuomo for the governor here in New York. And, his fundraising kind of lagging, Len. He has raised just $210,000.
And what does the governor have? $9
million? $9.2 million. So, poor little Molinaro's going up against the governor. $210,000 versus $9.2 million. That $210,000, by the way, doesn't include an outstanding $45,000 loan from his running mate, Julie Killian, that eventually has to be repaid. So, I mean, we had him on the show, and seems like an impressive, intelligent guy to me, but it's tough to go up against.
It's tough. It's the
war chest. Cuomo break your bones machine.
Now, what do you think is going to happen in New Jersey, Joe, with Menendez?
That's fascinating.
Bob Menendez, of course, was found not guilty in his trials of corruption, but he's up against Bob Hugin. They're saying he should be a little bit worried here because the latest polling shows one in every five Hispanic voters hasn't decided yet. And the Hispanic voters should be a slam dunk. He should be getting 80-90% of them.
Menendez could lose, although he's making it a race now that he voted against Kavanaugh and that, you know, he will block further Trump Supreme Court appointments.
So that's his pitch now?
That's the way he thinks he can win, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone really saw this race tightening up as it has. But People thought Menendez was just going to sail right to re-election.
No, he's pretty tainted in terms of what he was accused of.
Yeah.
Not good stuff.
No. It would be fun to see the Republicans snap up another seat, I can tell you that.
Fun for who?
For Joe and me.
Oh,
that's what I mean.
Yeah. Checking.
All right, we're making the rounds of the morning talk shows. When we come back, the lawyer for the Deadly Limo Company is speaking out. We're going to have that for you. But first, let's get the news. It is now 7 o'clock.